My friend, Dave McMullen, is probably one of the smartest guys I know. He is. He makes me think. He challenges me on different issues, and we have some terrific conversations about all kinds of things. He owns an organization called The Trajectory right now, which helps organizations, companies, think about the cultural issues that they're dealing with in their businesses and helps them deal with change management. And so he's going to talk to this morning about a really important issue, and that is, how in the world do we deal with a turnover in our companies that we're dealing with today? So I'm going to let you tell you the title of his talk and get into it, but I think you're going to be fascinated by this talk. So a big Friday morning, Men's Fellowship. Welcome to my friend, Dave McMullen.
Well, thanks, Mark, very much. And I appreciate our friendship very much as well. And you challenged me in a lot of ways. I remember when we first met. You know, I'm a marketer. I'm a creative thinker. I'm an outside-the-box guy. I'm also not really a rule follower. I guess maybe that makes me a good entrepreneur, which drives my wife crazy, by the way, because she's, what's the next thing we need to be doing? List maker, rule follower, and I'm like, meh, we'll figure it out. Drives her crazy. But Mark comes in, and he teaches our small group Bible study, and he is teaching, like, hitting his fist on the pulpit and teaching the Bible, and I'm like, who does he think he is? He knows that Bible so well. And so my first reaction to Mark was that he was challenging me in a way I did not like. And I mean, gosh, this has been 15, 20 years ago. But what I learned about myself was, okay, I like challenging people, but maybe I don't like being challenged so much. And, you know, that's a truism of all of us. But, you know, I hope during this talk that we'll have open minds and open hearts and really try to think of a way. I'm going to share this talk with you guys, but it's really your responsibility to find the nuggets in it, find the parts in it that are meaningful to you. I can't possibly apply it to everyone's business and everyone's life, everyone's leadership and family. But I can share what's on my heart. I can share what God's led me to share, and you do what you want with it. Take it where you want. Take the nuggets that are great, throw out the bones, and keep the meat. Awesome. So let me say a quick prayer before we begin. Father, I pray that we will have open hearts and open minds. Remind us of the responsibility that comes with the gift of leadership. Let your Holy Spirit work in each of us this morning, and may you receive all the glory. Amen. So all of us at the moment, I was just talking at our table about turnover, right? It is a big deal. Turnover, whether you call it the great resignation, the turnover tsunami. How many people feel like they're in a war for talent right now? It's a struggle, right? And even if you're not, if you don't have turnover, your folks want more money, they want crazy benefits, or they want to work from home, you think they ought to be internally, you know, in the office or vice versa. It's mass chaos. And, you know, the cause of it is a bit interesting to me. Right, so we can all deal with the symptoms, and we can all see what the symptoms are. And I'm going to talk about maybe some ideas to fight with the symptoms. But let's dive into the cause a little bit. Right, I think what the pandemic did, right, and not just the pandemic, the summer of 2020, racial tension, political tension. Now we have inflation. Now we have you name it. We have dealt with it over the last couple of years. Right? And that makes people internalize. It makes people reflect on what's going on in their life. And I think what we're dealing with here, especially when you think about the topics that come up and the topics that are important to people, is a crisis of meaning. I think we're having a meaningless moment as a society. And our people are struggling with that. And I think if you're like most people, the initial reaction is they want more money. They just want more money. Right. You know, in fact, I had a client I talked to just last week, and I asked him if I could share this story because it's kind of funny to me. All of his people, I think he has 30 employees, all of them wanted more money. They all wanted a raise at the same time. And so he said, well, how do I handle that? So he just across the board gave a 10% raise. And this is a kind of business where payroll is 50% of the business, right? So 10% increase in payroll is a 5% decrease in profitability in one day, right? So he struggles with that, but he says, I just felt like I had to do it to keep my people. 3 weeks later, two of his top leaders left, or they came to him and they said, we're leaving. He said, well, I gave you, what happened? Why, right? One of them, this cracks me up, one of them is said, well, I actually just want to work remote because I'm going to move to Arizona and live in a yurt. Yeah, no, I had to Google yurt. It's like a round, big round tent. I'm like, okay, well, that's fantastic, wonderful. Good. God bless you, right? Good luck. So, and the other one, 3 days later, came and said, you know what, I'm actually leaving as well. My wife and I are selling our home. We're going to buy an RV, and we're going to travel for the next year. Well, what does that have to do with a raise? What does that have to do with money? Right? And so he found himself in this spot where maybe it's not about money. Maybe his leaders were looking for something else. The only way they knew to discuss it, the only way they knew how to talk about it was with money, right? In fact, all the polls right now, if you go out and say, well, what do my people want? And you Google it and you find a survey or something like that, they all say salary is at the top of the list, right? But I contend that it's at the top of the list because it's the only way people know how to express it. If they say, well, look, if I have to come into this job and do boring work, right, in a place that I don't like, with people I don't like, I'm going to need more money. That's just the way it is, right? I mean, we've all probably been there, actually. We kind of understand that. But the truth is, you know, if you think about that, no matter how much you pay, there are some jobs, you know, it's not about the money. You could, I'm going to offend someone in here, I'm confident. You could not pay me enough money to be an accountant. I just couldn't do it. You would hate me doing it. I would hate doing it. Everything would be wrong. It just would be a bad idea, right? But there's some jobs I would do for free, right? If the U.S. national soccer team called me today and said, McMullen, we need you. We need a right back. You're in, but we can't pay you. No problem. I'm in. Yeah. Could happen. What's so funny? Yeah. Anyway, so how do you recruit and retain in this situation? Right? The answer might not be to pay more. So like most business people, especially Christian business people, I turn to the Bible when I need insight in this situation. And like most of us, my guess is you guys are the same way. I start in Proverbs. Right? It's just so direct. It's just so clean. The wisdom is so pure and straightforward that Proverbs is just a great place to start. And in fact, during my most stressful time, I was just talking to Jeff about this earlier, I exited Red Pepper. My company was called Red Pepper. I was negotiating with my business partner, who was also my brother, and we had been in business for 20 years, and at the time, this was our only income stream, either one of us, and we're negotiating for one of us to keep the business and one of us to leave. Tiny bit of stress there. And so I found myself so distracted and so unable to focus on anything. I couldn't even like read stories in the Bible. This had to be the Holy Spirit. Somehow or another, I was led to just find one verse, one proverb, and I studied that one proverb for 6 weeks. One verse. And I would just lay in bed, can't think about anything else, and I would think about this verse. Turns out that proverb that I studied was Proverb 9:10. Right? If you know Proverbs 9:10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. And so I would lay there frustrated and angry, and I'd say, well, fear of the Lord, fear of the Lord. What is fear? What does fear mean? Deep dive on fear. Who's the Lord? What's he all about? Right? What wisdom? What are you talking about? Why is it the beginning of it? So I just dove in. And I learned something incredible. That not only is the Bible deep, but just every part of it is deep. In fact, I just saw last night while I was preparing, did you know the Bible has 65,000 cross-references where one verse points back to another one? And the article I read said the Bible is basically the first hyperlinked book, right? It's like its own Wikipedia, which is unbelievable. But if you think about it, you know, that this is true in the natural world as well. Have you ever heard of the deep field project from the Hubble telescope. You know what that is? The deep field project. So what they did was they sent the Hubble telescope up and they took pictures of the sky and it was beautiful. And I don't know if you remember, we saw stuff we'd never seen before and it was amazing. What they did, they said, well, let's find the darkest place in the sky and point the telescope at that and see what's out there. Guess what they discovered? It looked just like the sky we saw before, just another billions of stars and galaxies. Well, they just launched the James Webb telescope. I don't know how many thousands of times stronger than the Hubble it is, but they did it again. They said, okay, well, let's go to the darkest spot in that picture. And guess what they found? Billions more stars and billions more galaxies. So it turns out that you can't go high enough. You can't go far enough to really outreach science in that direction. But by the way, it also goes deeper. I mean, remember when you thought electrons and neutrons were the smallest things, right? And studies, somebody said quarks, that's right. Now we know there are quarks. The whole study of quantum mechanics and how tiny it is and how what we thought about gravity and all that doesn't, you know. So the Bible is just like the physical universe. You can't go high enough to outreach it, and you can't go deep enough to find the bottom. It's just not going to happen. That was my experience. And it was unbelievable. But let's talk about this verse for a minute because I think this is important. What does that mean? Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. What is he trying to tell us in there? And, fear is kind of interesting, especially if you think about it in terms of gravity, right? You're not afraid of gravity until you walk out on a ledge outside that window. I bet you're afraid of it, right? You don't love gravity, but you're kind of glad your rear end staying in the seat and your lunch stayed on your plate or dinner, your breakfast stayed on your plate, right? So we have a healthy respect, a healthy fear with gravity and that kind of thing, right? So that's the way I think of creation. Now, I don't want to oversimplify our relationship with God, so let me be careful there. But I do say that, in Proverbs, that's what's happening here. There are laws built into the universe by the Creator that if we follow and study and follow, that's the beginning of wisdom. There are moral, ethical, and spiritual laws built into the universe, just like gravity and thermodynamics and all of that. And we understand this, right? I mean, you naturally know if you plant corn in the spring, you will reap blank in the fall, right? Corn, of course. You know if you spend money, invest wisely, you will reap profits and financial security. You know, if you treat people well, you will reap strong relationships. And as leaders, you know, if you invest in developing young leaders in your organization, later you reap strong relationships, a nice pipeline of leaders inside your organization. Right? These are things you instinctively know. But that's what's been built into the fabric of the universe. So the message of Proverbs is, live wise and your life will go well. Fear of the Lord. Work in harmony with the Creator and His creation, and you will reap the benefits. So what's our reaction? So if I study God's commands and follow them in my life and work, the things of my life and work will go well. Is that right? You agree with that? That's what Proverbs tells us. But that's not always the case, is it? If you think about it, we have tons of examples and exceptions to that. Many people who are good suffer. Many people who are bad thrive. What's up? Well, Job, I'm going to touch on, by the way, if I don't know if anybody's following in their Bible, but I'm going to touch on Proverbs, Job, and Ecclesiastes, three books of wisdom. So Job is a clear example of everything I just said about Proverbs. Right? There's your laws, you do this, you A, B, then you then C, you will reap these rewards, plant corn, reap corn, like all of that. Job says, wait a minute, hold up. Because this is what the Bible, and in the Bible, God says about Job. In the land of Uz, there lived a man whose name was Job. This man was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. By the way, he feared God, just like Proverbs said. So he's blameless, but he lost everything. I don't want to rehash the story of Job. You know who Job is and what he had to deal with. So for no apparent reason, he loses everything. In fact, he asks God why, and God does not respond in the way he would have expected him to respond. He doesn't say, give Job the reason why Job had to suffer. But what does God say? God said to Job, who are you? And who am I? Right? God actually takes Job and shows him the universe, shows him the creation, from the highest to the lowest, big animals, small animals, stars, the whole thing, shows it to him. And basically says, you know, I laid all this out. Where were you when I did it? Who are you to challenge it? Who are you to not trust me with what I know and what I'm doing? And Job basically says, okay then. I got it. So now that I've shared these two sort of opposing viewpoints on God, where do we go from here? Like, if the talk was over and I walked off the stage, what would you do with it? You'd be a little stuck, right? And if I'm thinking through my people's eyes, ears, and minds, you know, I would say, well, if it doesn't matter how I live, why am I working so hard? If it really doesn't matter whether I'm good or bad, why am I worried about that? If it really doesn't matter whether I, you know, if I plant and I take care of that soil and I do all the right things, you know, there's a possibility I won't get corn in the spring, and that's a big problem. Well, guess what? It gets worse. Not better, worse. Ecclesiastes, you know the word from Ecclesiastes? Meaningless. I don't know how many times, 100 times, 200 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. Meaningless. In fact, meaningless can be translated, the Hebrew word can be translated to vapor or smoke, right? Something that just can't be grasped. In fact, in some ways it's better, that translation, because of the way, if you read the book with that in mind, it takes on a little bit different meaning. But let me read some of this for you. Meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come, generations go, but the earth remains forever. Well, now, when I read that, basically what I hear is, you work hard and then you die. How encouraging is that, right? That's not a message that really makes your people want to come to work and give it their all for you, right? I mean, you know, so if you're doing a Bible study with your people, maybe don't start with that one, you know. And it goes on, by the way, what a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. The book is filled with this sentiment, and it's an important point of view on God and on our people, the people that we lead. But there are a few nuggets of gold in here that we should pick out and understand and wrestle through with this topic. So let me share those. If you don't mind, though, I'm going to read Ecclesiastes 3. It's a little bit long. There's a poem in it, so maybe you'll enjoy it. And I'm confident most of you have heard this before, but I think it's meaningful for us to hear it, so then when we talk about it, we'll know what we're talking, we'll know where we are. All right, so this is Ecclesiastes 3. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. What do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time, He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so his people will fear him. So hopefully you heard a little thread of Proverbs and Job in that. And I'm going to share some of those takeaways. But given this environment, right, the Bible, God is basically telling us here, yeah, I get it. Your people are struggling with meaning. Your people are trying to figure it out, right? The pandemic did was make people stay at home and rethink their lives, rethink their world, rethink their work, rethink their careers, rethink coming back to work for you, right? So how do we deal with this? How do we as leaders lead in this situation? And I'm going to give you 5 takeaways. The first one is to have seasonal awareness, right? Verses 1-8 that I just read, I won't read them again, but there's a season for every activity. Everything is part of God's gift. Everything, as leaders, our job is to see and share the big picture, right? That's what seasonal awareness is. Have you ever heard of the lifeline exercise? You guys know what this is? It's a pretty interesting little fun thing to do. If you give someone a piece of paper and you draw a line right through the middle of it, and that's neutral on how they feel about their life, right? If you ask them, so if it's negative on my life, impact on my life, it's below the line. Positive impact on my life, it's above the line. If you ask them, from today forward, what does that line look like? They all will draw a nice, smooth line up and to the right, right? 100%. But if you say, now go back and look at your life in the past. How was your life before today, starting from birth to today? Guess what? Above the line, below the line, peaks, valleys, struggles. And you ask them, would you trade any of that? You know, maybe 2 or 3 things that were valleys, but no, not really. So why do they expect it to be so smooth going forward? Why do we do that, right? Sometimes I invest in startups, and every startup ever had either zero profit or very little, or maybe they're losing money. As soon as I invest, it's going straight up. I'm like, wow, that's some kind of miracle happening there. I don't know what's going on, but sounds like somebody else has been there. You know, but the truth is all work isn't fun. All work isn't fulfilling. There are times when we have to endure, right? There are times we have to press on, drive through, and that's what leadership is all about. Is expressing and sharing those. How many of you would say 2020 and 2021 were your worst years ever? A few. How many of you would say it was your best year ever? Yeah, it's not surprising that the people were raising their hand during that. Are you kidding me? Did you guys see what was going on out there in the world? How'd you do that? Right? Well, in reality, if you flip it on its head, right, yes, all of that stuff I listed at the beginning was going on. Really tough times for all of us. But was it your worst year ever, or did you overcome adversity as a person and as a company and as a leader and discover that you can handle way more than you ever thought you could? Did you survive the worst black swan, terrible environment you could possibly imagine, and you're still here today? You're sitting here today at a leadership breakfast. So apparently you're still the leader, right? So share that sentiment with your people. Tough times are great opportunities to develop future leaders. Remind them of the good times and the bad times, and remind them of the bad times in the good times. That's seasonal awareness. In fact, I won't go into it, but if you think about Joseph, right? What was Joseph's pivotal moment? It was when he told Pharaoh, during a good time, prepare for a bad time, right? That was the thing that he did. I get the, you know, reading, you know, interpreting the dreams and all of that, but that's what he actually did. He said, you're about to have 7 great years. You better prepare for 7 bad ones. And it, you know, made him famous. The second one is show empathy for your people. A lot of times, especially when we get a little gray hair going, we've been around the block a few times. We've worked hard. We've earned what we think we've, you know, we've earned our position, and we expect others to earn theirs. It's easy to say, well, just, you know, the work ethic is gone, right? Just go back and do your job. I'm paying you to do a job. Just go back and do it, right? Got to be careful with that sentiment. Because verse 9, listen to this. Verse 9 says, what do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. So we have to understand as leaders that work is toil. It can be boring. It can feel meaningless, right? And a work life that makes home life more difficult is an extra burden, is a bigger burden. And that's, by the way, what they were thinking about while they were locked down at home, right? That lockdown just gave people a chance to say, is this all there is, right? And many people, by the way, decided to prioritize family. There's nothing wrong with that. We as leaders should probably celebrate that. Like, I don't know about going and living in a yurt, right? But deciding that we're going to be a one-income family and one of us is going to stay home and raise the kids, I mean, that's wonderful, right? So we should really try to celebrate those kinds of things. But the real key is to understand what they're going through. And as you guys work through your hybrid model, right, whether people are going to come in to the office, work from home, all that kind of stuff, you got to see things through your people's eyes. I remember early on in my business, I looked up and I had about 25 employees, and it felt like 20 of them were ladies between the age of 23 and 33. And I went to my wife and I was like, yikes, I'm about to have, they're all wanting to be, get married and have babies and start families. And what do I do here? They're all going to leave me. That's what my wife did to her job. And she said, I got one word for you, flexibility. And I was like, wisdom from my wife is unbelievable and so simple and so clean and clear. And she was exactly right. That's what those ladies wanted. Right, they wanted the ability to drive their kid to school and then come to work. They wanted the ability to take off when someone was sick. They wanted to work, most of them. Some did leave, but like I said before, I celebrated that. But you know, so we built flexibility into our policies. Very broad vacation policies, very broad work from the office policies, and that kind of thing. And I understand we're in a creative world and creative environment. And I dealt with very high-level professionals, so I didn't have to micromanage their day. I mean, I understand there's some complexities in there, but still, it was amazing. The third one is find something beautiful every day. Verse 11 says, he made everything beautiful in its time. Can you build beauty, humor, and fun into your company's routine? I don't care what you do, even if you're an accountant. Sorry. The world is a beautiful place. They're at home. I don't know how y'all are even listening to me when that beautiful view is out there, right? The world is a beautiful place. But are they seeing that and then coming into the office, right? Is your office a beautiful space? Do people suffer death by meeting? I'll just leave that there. Or is there a way to make work fun? The work fun, by the way. I'm not just talking about happy hours. Can you build work into the fun into the work? Because there's actually a pretty cool, it's awesome that we're in this building and I see all these, you know, inspiring ideas on the office and on the park here, but there's a renaissance going on in office interior design right now, right? You remember 10 years ago, maybe more, should office be totally open or do people want their own office? And now people say, well, I don't want to, you know, I got to have a screen between me and the guy beside me, and you're wrestling with all that. But if you dive in and get some creativity going, you'll discover that you can create a pretty inspiring workplace. And I recommend you do it because your competitors are doing it. That's a plug for my daughter who's an interior designer. Just call me. I'll get you set up. Another thing in this idea of beauty, by the way, is everyone loves to learn and grow. Can you create a culture that rewards learning new things and then sharing them with others? In my old company, one thing we did was we had a thing called Redbit. our company was called Red Pepper. But the thing, Red Bits were basically TED Talks, 10 to 12 minute talk. You go learn something, whether you're the lowest on the low or the highest of the high in the company. You go learn something, capture it into about a 10-minute share for the rest of us, and then you share it with the company. We actually give you a mic, whole set. You're going to teach all of us that thing you just learned. You talk about watching people grow. It was inspiring. Really beautiful to watch people learn and grow. And just a quick note here about your teams. I mean, if you have one cancerous person on your team, they will spoil the beauty, humor, and fun for the whole team. You got to deal with it. I don't have time to go into that right now, but you all know as leaders, one bad apple makes the whole bunch a problem. All right, number four is connect work to purpose. Verse 11 says, He has set eternity in the human heart, yet no one can fathom what God has done from the beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live. Eternity on their hearts. That's not just believers. That's everyone. We have eternity on our hearts, right? And yet, he sort of says in the very next words here, but you can't quite put your finger on it, right? So there's a struggle built into every person that you lead's heart. If they're human, they're dealing with this. So do your best to have a meaningful mission statement, meaningful core values, not platitudes. If integrity is one of your core values, get rid of it, put something else in there. Integrity is supposed to be part of the way you do business, right? So have meaningful core values. They matter more to people now than ever, especially your younger people. The work ethic is not gone. They just need a reason. Right? No more work for work's sake. And by the way, no more money for money's sake. There's no raises for nothing. Right? It's a two-way street. We should get something for a raise if we're going to give it. It might feel like it's all about money at the moment, but it'll pass. Then mission will be back on top. And another thing, I bet most of us in this room have a charity or something we donate money to or donate our time to or give to. Hopefully that's not just you as the leader doing that. Is there a way for you to incorporate giving back into your company and so your people can participate in that? Right? Make it about the organization giving back and the organization doing good. Because what ends up happening is they don't see that money going out the door. They don't understand that. And then they're looking for their own way to give back and to do good. And it's going to be something outside of your business. In the creative field, there's a thing called Create-A-Thon, which is pretty cool. The older I get, the more this is a miracle to me. But we would basically our people would select nonprofits, and then the nonprofits would tell us what they needed. We need a logo. We need a website. We need a brochure. We need our story told better. We need, you know, something like that. And then our team would work from sunup one morning, overnight, and then the next morning at sunup, they would deliver all the work to the nonprofits. So they worked overnight, no sleep. Really fun when I was young. Not so much fun when I was old. But you talk about energy, right? Because now you're the next morning, by the way, you have this sort of no sleep buzz going on, and these people come in and you share with them, you tell their story for them better than they ever told it before. They start crying, we start crying. I mean, the meaning of that lasted the whole year, and it impacted the entire culture. It was really cool. Really cool. Number five is celebrate all the gifts from God. Verse 12 and 13 says, I know that there's nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that they may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is a gift of God. I bet you didn't know the Bible's where we get eat, drink, and be merry. My pastor says, but doesn't mean alcohol, Dave. I know. But the message here is that it's all a gift, all of it, the good and the bad. Think about Job. What we didn't talk about was when he lost everything, he still praised God for who God was, not because of what he had, right? I'm very guilty of when things are going well, saying, thank you, God, you're so amazing. Thanks for all this stuff. Not really wrong in itself, but if the stuff was gone, would I still have that same praising heart? Right, like Job did. You're welcome. But if it's all a gift, right, the good, the bad, goals, wins, losses, people coming, people going, customers coming and going. There's a company in Boston, the name's escaping me, but they literally celebrate when people leave. So they found a way to embrace turnover. Now that's kind of interesting. Why would anybody do that? Well, it turns out they recognized that the work that they had people doing was just a step in their career. And they embraced it. And they said, look, we know people were just a step on the ladder here. So why don't we recruit with that in mind and say, when you get here, we're going to develop you. We're going to build skills in you. Yes, you're going to work for us and you're going to work really hard. But then we'll help you find your next step. We'll celebrate you out the door. We'll support you. We'll always be here for when you leave. And they became a great place to be from. And guess what that did to their recruiting pipeline? Right? They became a launch pad. A lot of us can use that, especially on our, you know, entry-level jobs. Just embrace it, right? You're not going to have a really sharp person that's a cashier or a clerk isn't going to last long, right? Embrace it. Provide opportunity for them. Make sure that their ceiling is very high with you. And then if they leave, celebrate it. And be sure to stop and celebrate, by the way. I don't know if you've ever heard of OKRs. There's a great book called Measure What Matters. And the book basically says objectives and key results. Some of these guys are in software or technology, you know what I'm talking about. But what they recognized, what that book pointed out was software development never ends, right? There's always another update. It's never finished. You could basically spend the rest of your life working on things. And so what they built was quarterly sprints, quarterly distances, and you basically would set an objective for the end of the quarter, and at the end of the quarter, you would celebrate that objective, right? Because we're never going to quite be done, and that's true in a lot of jobs, by the way. It becomes Groundhog Day, because every day looks the same, the same, the same, the same. And if you don't build in a rhythm where you can celebrate something along the way, right, and annually probably isn't enough. But people work can really become monotonous and boring if it looks the same every day. In fact, somebody shared with me one time that if you look back on your life, literally you can measure the length of the life you've lived by your different experiences, by the big things that happen, the different things that happen, good and bad. Maybe you string together vacations or kids' moments in kids' lives or whatever. But guess what happens to the days that look exactly like every other day? They get condensed into one day. So that day you had and your people had that looked just like every other day, they got in traffic, they worked, they got in traffic again, they went home, they ate dinner, they watched TV, they went to bed, and they got up and did it again. That's like shortening your life, right? We have to be able to build. We have to be able to build extensions in there and things that are different and exciting and new and stopping and celebrating those things. So I'll wrap up. If all of life is a gift of God, the good and the bad, and we can't really know his ways, why don't we just learn to live the gift of life to its fullest and worship him for who he is? Right? Can we not only do that ourselves, but can we lead others to think and feel that way? Right? There are ways to build into the things we've talked about with folks that follow you that are not believers. Right? And there may maybe be people in here that are not necessarily believers or don't consider themselves Christians, but these principles are true. Right? That's one of the beauties of biblical wisdom, and particularly those three books, is that we can know that, that it's reliable. So verse 14 says, I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it, and nothing can be taken from it. God does this so people will fear him. Circles right back to that fear of the Lord. Circles right back to that idea that I'm going to give you these wisdoms. I'm going to give you this command. And you, this is how you're to live your life. This is how you're to lead. These are the ways you're to do it. And when things go up and things go down, celebrate them with me. Remember who I am. Remember who you are. And try to make the most of it. Let me pray for us. Lord, who can understand how great you are and all you've done? You created this beautiful universe. You placed eternity on our hearts. That's amazing. Help us to be grateful and to praise you in good times and bad times because of who you are. Lead us to follow your commands so that our life and work will be blessed. But help us to trust you in good times and bad. Thank you for Jesus, his death and resurrection. Thank you for what that means to us as sinners, and for all you've done, and for who you are. We praise you. Amen. Thank you.